Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is using file notes with WebSphere Message Broker version 6.1. Today's presenter is Thomas Bean. Thomas joined the WebSphere Message Broker L2 support team in January 2008. His responsibilities include troubleshooting and resolving IBM customers' technical issues with WebSphere Message Broker. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Thomas.
Hello, everyone. As Joseph said, my name is Thomas, and I hope you're all having a nice day. Today, we are going to be looking at two new nodes that were brought in with Message Broker version 6.1 to add functionality to your flows and allow them to interact with your file system. Let's look at slide 2, and we will look at today's agenda. First, we are going to start out by looking at the previous file capabilities of Message Broker before version 6.1, before stepping into the two new nodes. We're going to cover those just from a basic level and see exactly what it takes to get these nodes started and working. At that point, we'll take a break and look at a quick demonstration before moving on to deal with the other node properties. After that, there are a few advanced ideas I'd like to touch on. And then we're going to look at using these nodes to perform transfers to remote servers. Lastly, we will finish up with a little troubleshooting and recovery. And that should pretty much cover the introduction to these file nodes. So let's move to slide 3. Prior to version 6.1, file input and output was handled in a variety of ways. The main one is a product extension for Message Broker entitled Message Broker File Extender, or it's known as MBFE for short. The file extender consisted of three nodes: file input node to read in files and put them into the message flow, a file output node to receive a message object and output it as a file, and a file proxy node which was meant to try to maintain some transactionality among these flows. This is a product extension, so it was not standard or shipped with Message Broker, so it's somewhat separated from the Message Broker product. Other than product extensions, we had two support packs, IA11 and IA13. Those are meant for the ZOS file system, operating system, and they allow for specialized writing, but are not meant for the distributed platforms. Unfortunately, there aren't any support packs for the distributed platforms at this time. We did have one built-in node, the trace node, that was capable of writing to a file. By default, the trace node is going to write to user trace, but it can be configured to write to a file if needed. However, this node was mainly meant for debugging, and we don't really recommend that it be used in a production environment for writing message information to a file as needed. Please do keep in mind, though, that the extension support packs and the trace node have all been updated, and they do still work with Message Broker 6.1, so the new file nodes that we have added does not overwrite any of this previous functionality. All of this is still available at version 6.1. So let's take a look at the file nodes now. We'll move on to slide 4. Here we can see the file input node. The node has four terminals, and below you can see the list of properties associated with the node. Right now we want to look at simply the basic properties and what it takes to read in a file. Of course, we're going to need to tell the file node where we want to look for an input file. So we need to fill out an input directory to tell us where to look. We need to tell it a file name to search for, so we know what file to read in. And lastly, we're going to need to tell it what to do with that file once we've read it in. Because if we simply leave it in our input directory, the very next time we search for a file, we'll find it and we'll be stuck in a loop. So by default, we are going to go ahead and remove that file from the directory by deleting it. Though we do allow the input file to be archived, or even, if needed, a timestamp pre-appended to the file name when we archive it. This allows a complete history of what has happened inside of that node. Now, by default, again, we are going to throw an error when duplicate file names appear when we place these files to the InfoSci archive directory, which is a subdirectory created for archiving purposes. That can be prevented, and we can simply replace the archive files if needed. But for the most part, we simply want to get the input file out of the input directory so that we can process the next file. Now, as you see up here, we not only offer the ability to look for a file name, but we can also look for a pattern. While we don't support regular expressions as patterns, we do support the ability to use wildcard characters. An asterisk in our file name pattern will indicate a match on any string of characters, while using a question mark will be used to represent any single character. We can string together several question marks to search on a specific length string. Now, if we move on to slide 5, we will see the file output node, and as you can see, it's very similar to the file input node. It's simply going to take in a message and write it instead of reading a file and creating it as a message. It will, however, propagate the incoming message out and will allow you to continue processing in your flow. So it should not be always seen as the end terminal in a flow. Again, in order to write a file, similarly to reading it, we're going to need to know where to write it, and we're going to need to know what to name the file. As you can see, we still offer the pattern matching for file output name, and that is because the file output node has the ability to see what the wildcard characters were in the file input node, and it can create its output file name based off of the input file name if needed. Once we output a file, we also need to tell the file output node what to do with that file. If no file exists, by default we are going to create the file, and if the file already exists when we go to write it, by default we are going to replace it. Again, we do allow options for archiving any duplicate file names, and we will go so far as to timestamp them if needed. Again, we can throw an error if a duplicate archive file name appears, or we can replace it without error if so desired. So, we may be wondering how the file output node has the ability to see what that wildcard character data was from the input node. And now if we move to slide 6, we can see how that is achieved. On slide 6, we have the local environment tree. The local environment tree is used to maintain flow-specific information across the duration of the flow, independent of the nodes that are in the flow. The local environment has a variety of subtrees. Here I have pictured only 5 of them, the 5 that I wish to touch on today, but keep in mind that there are many more. First, the variable subtree. This variable subtree is simply a work area for user information to be passed in between nodes. There is no message broker supplied node that will ever modify or inspect the variable subtree by default. So that is a safe place to store user information if needed. The file subtree is where our file input node is going to output all of the information for the file that it has read in. It will fill out the directory that it found the file, the name of the file, when it was last accessed, things like that. The destination subtree is going to be an alternate location for a file directory and file name, and we'll look at that more in a minute, but for now, that's stepping a little ahead. The written destination subtree, similar to the file subtree, the written destination subtree is where the file output node is going to write the information about the file it outputs. It's going to fill this out in the event that the file output node is not the last node in the flow, and perhaps that file information is needed later on in the user flow. Lastly, we have the wildcard subtree. The wildcard subtree is where we store our wildcard data, either the complete string or single character, whatever the incoming wildcard information is from the file input node. And if a wildcard is used in our file output node, the file output node will inspect this subtree to gain the character information to build its file name from. With this in mind, let's go ahead and look at a simple flow demonstration. On slide 7, I have prepared a flow. Unfortunately, we can't do this live, so I've run this ahead of time. As you can see here, my flow consists of a file input and a file output node, though keep in mind that these two nodes do not necessarily have to work as a pair. If you use a file input node, you don't have to use a file output node within the same flow, and a file output node does not need to follow a file input node. I simply created this flow to show both at the same time in the interest of time. I've added in a few trace nodes, and I want them to output to files if my message goes through them, just to keep track of where my message goes. As you can see, I've attached two of them to failure terminals, just in case any failures occur. I hope that it won't cause any failures, considering I've already run the flow, but we'll see. Now, my file input node I have set to look inside a WSDE sample directory I've created on my C drive. I've created an input subdirectory for my input directory, and an output subdirectory for my output directory, and a trace subdirectory for my trace files to write into. My file input node is going to go ahead and match on any file that matches a .in extension. Doesn't matter what I name it, as long as it ends in .in, I'll read it in. My output file, similarly, will take the incoming file name and add .out as an extension. So we'll take .in files in and write .out files out. Seems simple enough. In the bottom right corner, we see my file system before and after I run this flow. Right before I started the flow, I put a test.in file into my input subdirectory. And once I ran the flow and let it complete, we see that the test.in file was no longer in my input subdirectory. As we already saw, by default, the file input node is going to delete that file, which is what it has done here. And under my output directory, I have a test.out file. Looking down in my trace directory, I see that the message did pass through trace 1, but there were no trace 2 or trace 3 outputs created, which is promising, says there's no failures. And the only other curious thing are two subdirectories that were created, one in my input and one in my output directories. The MQSI backout and MQSI transit directories were created by my nodes to make sure that there would be no problems along the way. To really understand why those showed up, let's move on to slide 8. On slide 8, we're going to peek under the covers at this simple flow and see exactly what happens when. To start off with, my file input node is going to, upon message flow start, is going to look inside the input directory for anything matching .in and find test.in. It's going to store test under the wildcard data in the local environment, and it's going to store the rest of the file information under the file subtree in the local environment. It'll then create that MQSI backout subdirectory just in case any errors occur and it needs to back out the file. It doesn't want to put it back into the input directory, so it will move it into a separate subdirectory to keep it safe. Lastly, once it finishes converting the file into a flow message, it'll output that flow message through its out terminal and send it on to the next node, which is our trace node. As we saw, my trace node did in fact write the trace1.out containing the message information that I wanted it to. It wrote that to the trace subdirectory, and then it output the message through its output terminal as expected. The file output node, when it receives the message on its end terminal, will begin to write the data requested into a file named test.out. Now, it's not going to write it directly to the output directory, but it's going to put it in the M2SI transit subdirectory. This directory is meant to simply keep the file safe and keep any other applications or programs from reading it or altering it while it's trying to output the data required. Once it has completed the file, it will then move it from the M2SI transit directory into the output directory. Unfortunately, this is a little bit of a typo here. That wildcard data will be used as it writes to M2SI transit and not when it writes to the output directory. Once it has finished writing the file, the file output node will send the message through its out terminal, which, as you can see, is not connected to anything, and that is when our flow ends. So we never make it through trace nodes 2 and 3, and as expected, there were no failures. So now that we've reviewed that, let's go ahead and move on to some of the common properties in file nodes and get those out of the way. On slide 9, I've highlighted 4 of the properties tabs on the file input node. Input message parsing, validation, and instances are all pretty much standard properties of input nodes with message broker. Message parsing is going to allow you to associate your message with a certain message set and message type. Validation is going to allow you to throw an error in the event that your message doesn't line up with your message set. And instances is going to control settings for additional instances. These are, like I said, pretty much standard for input nodes, so we don't want to look at them too deep. And it should be noted that the validation settings are also found on the file output node, though the other two aren't really. Okay, well, with that out of the way, let's move on to slide 10, where we have the polling value. Polling value is how often the file input node is going to look for a file on our file system. Unfortunately, the file system won't ever just sort of tell us that a file is available, so we need to, after a certain amount of time, go out and look for one. By default, we're going to wait 5 seconds to go look for a file. What that means is after we start our flow and it reads all of the files it can that match the input pattern, it's going to search again and it's not going to find any files. At that time, our file input node will go to sleep for 5 seconds. And after those 5 seconds, it will wake up and process all the files it can find in the input directory. As soon as it can't find any more files, it will then go to sleep again. So this doesn't mean that it's going to wait 5 seconds before reading each file. It just says that it's going to take a 5-minute break every time it can't find any files. So as long as it finds files, it will continue to process. Now, under the polling tab, we do allow this 5-second default value to be altered. If 5 seconds is simply too long of a time to wait, it can be decreased. And if you don't expect to receive files but every several minutes or maybe even once an hour, perhaps checking every 5 seconds is a little too often. So the value can also be increased to a longer period of time. Now, if you decrease this value, you're certainly going to check for files more often and you'll see shorter response times on average for your flow to pick up a file and review it. But at the same time, that's going to come with increased flow processing and CPU time as the file input node has to very regularly check the file system for more files. The inverse is going to be true if you want to increase the value. Your CPU time may go down and your flow processing amount may go down as you don't have to check but every so often. But at the same time, then you're going to see an increase in response times and that message, that file may sit out there a little bit longer than expected. So now let's move to slide 11, where we look at transactions. Unfortunately, all file system interactions are going to be non-transactional in nature. There's simply no way that we can ensure transactionality when writing or reading from a file. However, that's not to say that an entire message flow that contains one of these nodes is without transactionality. The transactionality of a flow is determined by its input node, and so our file input node does contain a transactions tab. That's going to allow the node to tell the rest of the flow whether it should be transactional. Similarly, if you have a file output node, it's not going to negate the transactionality of the entire flow. The transactionality of that flow is going to be determined by its input node, which is completely independent of the file output node. With that said, there's one last property I'd like to look at before we go on to those advanced ideas I mentioned earlier. Slide 12, we see our file output request settings. The request settings are three settings that specify a little bit more the behavior of the output node. The first is going to be the data location. And this is going to be where the file output node looks for the information to write to a file. By default, and in our demonstration earlier, we were looking at $body, which is the entire input message. So by default, we will write the entire message to a file. But this can be altered and set using XPath to point to any message element or even to an element in the local environment if needed. The remaining two settings on this request tab are the directory and name overrides for the file node, the file output node. By default, this is going to look in the local environment tree at the destination file subtree we mentioned earlier. And in there, we have two values, the directory and name values. If these resolve to any values at all, we're going to use those values to override the settings on the basic tab. And at that point, we will output to where it is specified here in the overrides rather than where we specified previously. This allows the message flow to compute a better location for the directory or a better name for the file and put those here in the event that you don't want a hard-coded directory or file name. All right, let's move on to some more advanced options. So let's advance to slide 13. And here we have a very important idea. And that idea is that an input file is not the same as an input message. An input file should be thought of more as a container of a number of records. It can be as few as one record or as many as you need. And each of these records is going to correspond to an input message. The records tab on our file input node is going to distinguish the number of records and determine how we find those records within an input file. By default, we are going to view the entire file as a record, which is going to make the entire file one input message, which is what we saw in our demonstration earlier. However, if we want, we can view this file as a series of fixed length records. We can give the file input node a value and say, for every number of these characters, we want each one of those to be a record. And the file input node will send out one message for each of these records of a fixed length it finds. Similarly, we can say, we have a delimiter, and we want this delimiter to mark the end of each record. So every time you find this delimiter, please send an output message. And the file input node will then send a message for each record it finds within the specified delimiter. Lastly, we have a parsed record sequence option, which will allow the file input node to use the settings in the message set to determine when a record has been completed. Once the file input node has finished reading the file, whether it reads the whole file as one or reads 100 parsed record sequence messages in it, when it's done reading that file, it's going to send a message through its end of data terminal. If there's anything connected to that end of data terminal, it will be informed when the file input node is done reading a file. You'll notice that in our demonstration earlier, this was not connected, and so that end of data message simply got discarded. So let's move to slide 14, where we will see the file output records. This is very similar to the file input node idea of records, but in reverse. This records tab is going to determine how we write the records into a file, whether we want those to be of a fixed length value going in, or whether we want to insert a delimiter between each record, or maybe we simply want to take every message coming in and output it as an entire file of itself. In any event, once we are done, we are, as I stated before, going to send whatever messages we received through our output terminal. However, if we are using some of our other options, such as outputting in fixed-length format or outputting in delimited format, we're going to need to tell the file output node when it should finish the file. We have a separate input terminal called the Finish File Terminal, and any messages we receive on it, we are going to start the finish file operations inside of our file output node. And that's going to consist of going into the MQSI transit subdirectory and finalizing that file and moving it into the output subdirectory. Once that's occurred, we will then send the end of data terminal a message, and that will output that the file output node is done writing its file. And again, that is in case you have further processing after your file output node. Please keep in mind that if you wish the entire message to be written, you don't have to necessarily write it as a whole file or with a delimited notation or with any amount of fixed length per record. You can just output the information to the file and continue to output until you receive a finished file command. And that is our new option here, record is unmodified data. That is similar to the whole file in that just the message gets written in. However, in unmodified data, it's going to wait for that finished file message to come in. Now that we've reviewed these advanced ideas concerning records, let's go ahead and look at our FTP possibilities. Let's advance to slide 15. And on slide 15, I've added in the FTP properties pane from the toolkit. Please keep in mind that this is valid up through Message Broker 6103. As some of you may know, 6104 was released this past Friday, and it contains a lot of changes to this tab. We'll get to that in a minute, but for now let's look at how to use these file nodes for FTP up through 6103. To start with, we have a checkbox. This enables FTP on the node and will activate all of these settings below. These settings will be used to override the settings that we've already configured up to this point and are going to allow the node to look at a remote directory on an FTP server for its input file. Once it finds a file out there, it'll transfer it over to the local directory specified in the basic tab, or if this is a file output node, it would do the processing locally and then transfer the file over to the FTP server. An important thing to keep in mind is that because the broker is operating on the local machine, all files will be transferred locally to the broker and then sent through the message flow. This isn't going to be done directly on the FTP server. Now, the first thing that we need to specify when we specify that we want to use FTP is our server and port. That is in the first setting here and should be, as seen in the example, be in the form of server name, port number. We do want to keep in mind, as we'll see in a few slides, that we can also put in a service name here where we can later go back and specify details for a service that points to this server and port. So we don't necessarily have to hard code in our server and port if we don't want to. The next option is security identity, and this will contain the login information for the file server that we are FTPing to. This should not be put down as a username and password. A security identity is going to be a logical object inside of the broker that is created through a separate command. And we'll look at that later when we look at the services that we can put under FTP server and port. Now, for the next three settings, the server directory, transfer mode, and scan delay, I'd like to move to slide 16, where we have a little bit more information. The server directory is going to point where on our FTP server we want to look for input files. If we don't set this, we are simply going to look in the root directory of the direct login to the FTP server. And if we want to set this to be somewhere other than the login directory of the FTP server, we need to make sure that we are specifying the directory information in a format that is suitable for the FTP server. That is to say, if your broker is running on Windows, you don't want a Windows file system notation for your FTP server if your FTP server is, say, on AIX. The transfer mode settings are going to determine whether you FTP your files in binary or ASCII, as we know that there are significant differences for transferring these for some files. Our file input node is going to use scan delay. The file output node does not have this option. The scan delay is similar to the polling settings for the local system, but it's going to be the scanning of the FTP server. So we want to keep in mind how often we are FTPing out to that server and looking for a file to transfer back. The file output node, instead of the scan delay options, is going to use a retain local file after transfer option. And that's going to say, considering we have all of this processing done locally, maybe I want to keep a local copy of my output file instead of simply sending it off to the FTP server. So that will allow our file output node to keep a copy locally using the local output settings, even if you have overridden them through FTP settings. Now let's move to slide 17, where we will look at the security identity and configurable services I was speaking about earlier. When we go to create a service for use in declaring our FTP server and port, we're going to use the M2SI create configurable service command. This command can be run against the message broker, so we need to include our message broker name. And considering we're using it for FTP servers, we're going to need to use the -C flag and specify FTP server. At that point, we can use the -O flag to specify what our service name is. In this case, I've used my service name. And that name is the name that we would need to place in the FTP server and port settings on the FTP panel in the file node. Once we've done that, the file node will use this configurable service for the properties that it contains. These properties will override any properties that have already been set on the file node. So we will use the -N and -V flags to specify in a comma delimited form the service properties below. And that is, as required, our server name and port information. But we can also include account information, the scan delay and transfer mode information that we just looked at. We can specify what type of connection we have, as well as where we want to go in the FTP server. And we can even specify the security identity object from the MQSI create configurable service. Now, a security identity is created through the MQSI setdbparms command. This command will need to be run with an FTP header on our identity name to make sure that the identity we create is used by the file node. That is done through the syntax MQSI setdbparms minus n FTP double colon and then the identity name. In this case, I've used my identity, and that should map to the security identity settings in the create configurable service or on the node itself. So you should not use the FTP double colon on the node. You should simply use it in the MQSI setdbparms command. Once that's been done, you simply need to add in the minus u and minus p flag for your username and password. And then the security identity for the FTP server has been completed. The create configurable service at version 6.104 has been altered, and it does contain a few more service properties than listed here. Unfortunately, this presentation was put together before the release of 6.104. So for information pertaining specifically to 6.104, please go visit our info center, as it will contain more of that information there. Let's move on to slide 18. Slide 18 is going to contain the reason why there were so many changes in 6.104 to the create configurable service command, as well as the FTP panel on our toolkit. In 6.103 and previous, these two file nodes did not have the ability to use secure FTP servers. In 6.103, an APAR was open, that's APAR IC60152, to address the need for FTP server, SFTP server support. That fix was targeted for 6.104, and I can now say, as of Friday, that we did release 6.104 with this fix included. So 6.104 does have the ability to use SFTP. I've downloaded it and installed it, and I have played around a little bit with the additional settings. So all of that has been included in 6.104. Now that we've covered FTP, let's move to slide 19. In slide 19, we will look at a little bit of troubleshooting and recovery. Because these file nodes are built into the broker, they are going to output any operating errors to the normal message broker error output location. On Unix, that would be the syslog, which is user configurable. On Windows, that's going to be the application event logs under the event viewer. And on VOS, that will be in the broker job log. However, if the error is not so much that it causes a complete failure of the node, and the file being operated on can still be salvaged, we do have a few settings for retrying the operation. Our file input node has a retry tab, and on that retry tab, we can point to what we want to do when a failure occurs. By default, we are simply going to fail the message or file at that point and move on to failure processing. Failure processing is going to consist of, by default, backing out the file to our backout subdirectory, which is why that MQSI backout subdirectory was created for our demonstration. If we want, however, we can simply delete the file if it causes an error. Sounds a little drastic, but we can do it if needed. Otherwise, the file input node can be configured to retry the file and message therein as many times as needed. A short retry is an idea of immediately retrying the file and message through the flow. And if that doesn't work, we will continue a certain number of times before failing. At that point, we then move to the back out or deletion as otherwise specified. But if we want to keep retrying, we can use a short and a long retry. A short and long retry should be thought of as multiple sets of short retry attempts. The long retry is simply going to be a wait time between your several sets of short retries. It should be noted, though, that if you use this option, the file input node is going to continue to retry and wait and retry and wait and retry until it either succeeds in processing the message or the flow is stopped and the message is manually removed. It does not have the ability to stop itself if it detects that it is going on too long. If you wish for the file input node to stop after a certain amount of time or a certain number of retries, then you should use the short retry settings. The file output node is not going to contain such retry settings. The file output node, if it is unable to write to the file because it's non-transactional, it's simply going to throw the error back, and the error will be reported to the previous node, and then a normal message flow error processing will occur from there. Other than that, we have pretty much finished up this presentation. Let's move on to slide 20. We have a short summary. Today we've talked about the new built-in nodes for Message Broker 6.1, which are specifically for file input and output, and those are the file input node and the file output node. These nodes should be customized to interact with files at the user's convenience and in whatever format the user needs. In the event that the files are not available locally, we do now support the ability to FTP to get those files, or even FTP to a secure FTP server. Now let's move to slide 21. This chart contains a number of links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. First, we have our DeveloperWorks link. DeveloperWorks offers an in-depth technical look at WebSphere technology. Next, we have our events link. The events link on support pages point you to our webcast and conference information. You can visit our third link, WebSphere.org, for user group information and more product information. Fourth, we have our Education Assistant, which is a series of self-help modules which will help new users get up the learning curve very quickly for our products. Fifth, we have our ESR tool. This is for our Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view our PMRs online. And last, we have our My Support link. The My Support link is going to be on all of our product support pages, and it's going to allow us to have you sign up for weekly email updates for the products that interest you. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Thomas, for a great presentation. At this point, Christina, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Bill Brown from Wells Fargo.
Yes. I'm curious, with the file input node, can you use it as a for periodically checking for like a properties, thinking in terms of a properties kind of node where we would read the file in only if it's changed and that we'd be able to store the contents, say, up in the environment variables for use in, repeatedly in a flow until that data changes? Third application that you've heard of or that we might be able to use that end?
Thank you, Bill. So the question is whether the file input node has the ability to recheck a file once it has been altered?
No, I think, well, yeah, I guess that would be one way to say it. you put the file out there, it detects that it's present, it reads it in, and takes the values and loads them up, say, into the environment to be used, you know, repeatedly. Perhaps there are, you know, there's path information, there might be authentication, loosely defined authentication credentials that you want to use within your flow, or you know, or other pertinent information that doesn't change regularly. You don't want to have to redeploy your flow when it changes, but you also don't want to read it every time a message goes through. You only want to pull it in periodically.
All right. Unfortunately, the local environment tree is initialized for each message, so it can't hold data over repeated messages routing through the flow. It's only going to be specific for the one instance of the flow that runs for a certain message going through. If you want to periodically check and pull in more information, at that point, my suggestion would be to use a more long-running variable, such as a regular environment variable.
Uh-huh.
So there's nothing inside of the file input node specifically that can handle that particular need.
Okay. Very good. Thanks.
At this time, sir, we have no further questions.
Thank you, Christina. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.